Welcome to a Monday mailbag edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union.
You have for me the message.
Today, we answer the questions that you've tweeted to at CBJ Radio using the hashtag CBJ in 30.
You want a message, eh?
If you have one for me, yes.
Yeah. Why don't you talk Tokyo Lily at the end of the block? Ask for Passion Flower Shirley, the Yokohama Butterfly.
And where should I do that?
Well, you want a massage, don't you?
Yes, but I want it from you.
Sir, I don't give massages.
But you gave me one only this morning.
You mean message?
Look, I know what I mean, you lunatic. Now, do you or do you not have for me the massage?
Here's your host with some very helpful advice.
Keep your questions within the boundaries of good taste.
Bob McGilligott.
Oh, Monday! Thank gosh it's Monday, my number one day. Back in the saddle at work I can shine. I love the rat race and the starting line is Monday. Thank gosh it's Monday. Sing with me, Gary!
Finally, a Monday song that I can relate to. Welcome to a Monday mailbag edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. I'm Bob McElligott. Well, the weekend turns out to be not so bad for the Blue Jackets. Well, not great. Not great by any means, but not so bad as they were able to snap a four-game winless streak with a shootout victory over the Detroit Red Wings on Saturday night. 2-1 was the final in that game, and that was a game that was, for all intents and purposes, pretty boring, quite frankly. And I thought it might be something other than that. Watching Artemi Panarin score a very exciting goal in the opening minutes of period number one, I thought, well, this might be the night. This might be the breakout offensive slaughter we've been looking for. But oh, no. No. It turned out to be one of the same when it came to offense, or lack thereof, as a matter of fact. Blue Jackets just couldn't get anything going throughout the course of the game after that. They had their chances, but you know, their chances just frankly weren't good enough against Jimmy Howard. Now, the same was true for the Detroit Red Wings. They had chance after chance. Sergei Bobrovsky shut down those chances. And then finally, they were able to come through with one with about, 13-some minutes left in the third period when Andreas Athanasiou was able to get free and put one behind Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky, I almost said overcommitted before the pass was made to Athanasiou. I think it was, to me, it was the second time in as many games that a player faked the shot and then instead passed it, that Sergei really came out and tried to cut down the angle so badly, or so much, I should say, on the guy that was trying to shoot it, or he thought was going to shoot it. He came so far out to cut down that angle that the pass was there to make and then just tap it into an empty net. So, hey, that is a very, very, very slight criticism, because as it turned out, Sergei Bobrovsky was the only reason the Blue Jackets won the game. And we've said that many times, but this time it couldn't have been more true. Going into the overtime, the Blue Jackets possessed the puck for almost all of overtime, almost the entire thing. But they had two breakdowns, and when they did, Sergei Bobrovsky not only was tall, he was absolutely, positively huge, especially in the 2-on-0 break with Athanasiou and Anthony Mantha. Athanasiou gives it to Anthony Mantha. He comes down low and makes the pass across, and Sergei looks completely hung out to dry. Nothing he can do. Game is over. All it is a matter of putting this puck into the net, and all of a sudden he had something in store for all of us. As he lunges to his left to square up on Mantha and then drops his stick and pushes back across to his right, getting his heel, the heel of his right skate, just far enough up in the air and turning the foot that it gets into the path of the shot and sends the puck high in the air, not into the back of the net. Incredible save by Sergei Bobrovsky. And I didn't ask him about this specifically after the game, but the dropping of the stick, I know, is a tactical move. When you want to make that big push across, there are times when you will purposely drop the stick so that it's not in the way in any way, shape, or form. I imagine that's why he did that. I didn't ask him. I didn't think about it until right now, as a matter of fact. But he did. He got across. He made the save. It was unbelievable. And then later in that overtime, Anthony Mantha had another chance on a breakaway. Sergei shut him down with a much more conventional save off the left pad, and that's what forced the game into a shootout. And in the shootout, Franz Nielsen comes right out and scores right away, makes it 1-0, and then the Blue Jackets miss on theirs. Then Sergei shuts one down. Then Artemi Panarin ties it at 1 in the shootout, and then we would go another 7 rounds, all the way to the 9th round of the shootout before John Tortorella finally called upon Jack Johnson, who goes in with a little deke move in front of Jimmy Howard, gets him to lean one way, brings the puck back around from the backhand to the forehand, tucks it around his right pad, and that's the end of the game. Blue Jackets win it 2-1. So the drama in the game was in overtime and then in the shootout. Regulation was just a garbled mess of nothingness. And then once the overtime came, that's when it got really exciting. But the Blue Jackets hang on. They get the win. It's a win they desperately needed and had to have. So, you know, again, finding a way, and that's exactly what the Blue Jackets did. So they go into their game tomorrow in Montreal off a win and have a chance to put together back-to-back wins. And again, something that they really need. They need to get another win. They need to start feeling much better about themselves, and they'll have the opportunity to continue it tomorrow night. Well, today is a Monday mailbag edition of the show, and that means I take your questions, and I have plenty of them, and I'm going to get to them in just a moment right after I tell you that great things can happen when you challenge the norm. And at Telhio Credit Union, they believe banking is a tool for good. They believe your money should help to finance your neighbor's house or build a local business. Just imagine what we could accomplish together if everyone banked like this. Ready to challenge the norm? Then talk to Telhio before your next big purchase, before your next car loan, your next mortgage. Join Telhio and learn to believe in banking again. Start by going to telhio.org. Telhio is open to everyone in central and southwestern Ohio. They are an equal housing lender and federally insured by NCUA. And now, let's find out exactly what you would like to talk about.
I want to know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I want to know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
I have to dig deep into the mailbag today because I think this one might have come in after the Friday night loss to the Carolina Hurricanes at Nationwide Arena. Anyway, it's from CBJ Jackalope, or is it CB Jackalope? Anyway, after watching the last couple of games, are the Blue Jackets damaging any kind of continuity between the lines by sticking them in the blender? Seems like no one is comfortable right now. Seems like no one is comfortable right now. Not no one. No one is comfortable right now. You know, that question is very similar to another question I have here. So let me just read that, and then I will go with a complete answer once everything is covered. And this one's from Laura Slack. It says, do you think the constant line shuffling is affecting the chemistry within the forward group? Also, our power play needs help. Last season, they tried Nudavar on the second unit. Why not try him or other guys, as it certainly couldn't make things worse? All right, let's address those things. The lines in a blender. Well, you know, John Tortorella is always one for doing that. I thought he was much more consistent with it on Saturday night against Detroit than he was on Friday night against Carolina. But on Friday night, in his defense, he realized that nothing was working against the Carolina Hurricanes and was trying just to do something. But you do have a point. You both have a point in the chemistry factor of it. If you know that if you make one mistake, you're not going to be back out there as a group, you do have the tendency at times to play a little bit tentative. So, yes, there's a little bit of a concern with that. However, if things aren't working, things aren't working. And right now you're only playing three lines. You've got two extra forwards, not an entire fourth line. And it is a bit of a jumbled mess. And it does affect some of the chemistry of the whole thing. But the Dubinsky-Jenner-Atkinson line, that's got the chemistry. I liked what I saw out of Bjorkstrand, Wenberg, and Panarin the other night. Now, will that continue? Hopefully it does. Will Wenberg continue to progress on an upward plane? Because I think the last two games he's done that a little bit. He needs to do it a lot more. I'm not saying he's anywhere near the finished product, but I am saying at least I'm seeing a bit of life coming from Alexander Wenberg. And I like how Bjorkstrand and Panarin played in that game. I think if there's a guy that Artemi Panarin might be able to figure out how to make it click with, maybe it is Oliver Bjorkstrand. They're both very talented guys. And Bjorkstrand, again, is no Patrick Kane, but nobody is. There are, what, three of those in the league, maybe. He's not him, but he does have a great offensive skill set, and he is very intelligent in the way he thinks the game. Those two might be able to figure it out. Foligno, Anderson, Dubois. Look, Nick Foligno was back on the wing, and John Tortorella told me before the game on Saturday that he didn't like the way Nick was playing down low at center on Friday, and that's why he switched him. I just wonder, look, Nick Foligno missed practice earlier in the week. I wonder if he's banged up, and I wonder if that's affecting, you know, his center play and what he can do down low right now. And I wonder if while they're waiting for him to kind of get back to 100%, nobody's playing at 100% hardly ever, but I wonder if they've moved him to the wing just to give him a break. They're not going to say, and he's not going to say, but I just wonder in my own mind if that's part of the philosophy there with getting him back on wing. As far as the power play goes, the first unit, it's going to come. I think they're going to start scoring goals. They're getting better looks. Zach Werenski's getting more used to running the power play from the half wall instead of being out toward the blue line or skating along the blue line. I think Seth Jones is doing a nice job running it from up top there. And once Werenski gets more settled, I think he is going to be a force on the power play. And the second unit, I think Ryan Murray's doing an okay job. I like Murray there with his responsibility a little bit better than Nudavara. The only way you're putting Nudavara out there is if you're going with two defensemen on that unit. Right now they only have one. I would sooner go with the more veteran guy who I feel is a little bit more responsible, so I have no problem with that second unit as it stands right now. Blake Marble says, why haven't we seen Jack Johnson in the shootout before? Those were some smooth moves. Well, nobody knew. As a matter of fact, when he came out on the ice and I saw his shootout numbers, I was like, thinking the same thing you were. Well, how come he never shoots in a shootout? He was at like 30%, which was better than some of the forwards. Nick Foligno went, he was 0 for 11 and now is 0 for 12. So he had good numbers. And, you know, John Tortorella said after the game, he said, Brad Larson and Cam Atkinson were lobbying me to put Jack Johnson in there. So I looked at Jack. I said, can you do this? And he goes, yeah, I'm good. So Jack not only said, yeah, I'm good, but he went out there and he proved that he wasn't telling a lie. So that's why he got in there. And, you know, Torts jokingly or maybe not jokingly said he's in the top three now. We'll find out next time they go to a shootout if that's the case. But he was the one guy that made a move. I thought everybody kept coming in and just shooting on Jimmy Howard. Like Howard was coming way out to challenge. And there were a couple of shots that were taken from the hash marks. And I didn't understand it at all. I didn't get it. And Jack Johnson must not have been able to get it either because he kept watching and watching and then said, look, somebody's going to make this guy move. And he went in and made that little backhand forehand maneuver, and it got him the win. So he did a good job. Good for him for studying and not just sitting there, not paying attention to what was going on at all. Ryan Santil says, with it being a contract year, do you see Cam Atkinson being with the Blue Jackets next year? That is one of the very quiet questions, Ryan, that nobody is asking or that many are not talking about. And I don't know. I have no idea. You know, he said prior to the season that once the season started, he didn't want to negotiate during the year. He wanted to wait until after the season. You can't do that if you're the Blue Jackets. You can't, because you have to figure out whether or not he has an intention of coming back. You have to figure out if you can pay him, what you're going to pay him, what he's going to accept. And if it doesn't work out, then you've got to make a move. You cannot let that guy walk and get absolutely nothing for him. I think we will all agree with that. You cannot let him walk and get nothing for him. So they've got to figure that out throughout the course of the season. And if it looks like he's not going to be able to come to terms, then you've got to deal him before the trade deadline, and you've got to get something. So I don't know how that's all going to play out. But it's going to at some point during this season, because you cannot let a guy that scored 30 and 35 goals in back-to-back seasons walk out the door and get absolutely nothing for him. You've got to get something, and he will have value. He will have value. No matter what his numbers are at the time that somebody's interested in trading for him, he will have value. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that situation. It's a really interesting one to watch. Again, Ryan Murray, Boone Jenner, Cam Atkinson, all up as unrestricted free agents. I'm forgetting something else. I also know that on July 1st, you can start negotiating with guys that have 1 year left on their contract, like Panarin and Werenski and Bobrovsky. So there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to the salary cap and figuring out who's going to be on this club or not. And I don't know if Cam Atkinson is going to wind up being a part of it. I really don't. If he is, that's great. That's fantastic. Then they worked it out and they found a way. If not, you've got to get something for him. You've got to get something good for him. You can't just let him walk out the door and have absolutely nothing to show for it. Tyler Barwick says, besides teams adjusting, can you explain why the Blue Jackets have just seemed out of sync since late last season? There's been flashes, but nothing consistent. I don't know. I can't explain that. They look discombobulated at times. They look like they're trying to figure out, you know, when Tort says we're trying to figure out what we are, at times they actually look like that during the game. They're trying to figure out at that moment what they are. They should know what they are. They know what they need to be. It's about putting in the work to do that on a regular basis. And I think as soon as they back away from that, we've got to play hard down low and we've got to do this and that. If they get complacent at any point of the game, or if they get, quite frankly, lazy at any point of the game and they don't want to put in that work, I think that's when they're completely discombobulated. So I guess my explanation would be you just got to put in the effort for the 60 minutes. And if you do, it won't look like they're out of sync. Rob the Nerd says, do you think the current struggles on offense are a result of simply not executing, inconsistent play from young players, or coaching not making the right adjustments, or maybe a combo of all three? I think it might be a combo of all three, to be honest with you. And I think the top two are more so than the third one, but the third one does play in. The coaching aspect does play in. There's no question about that. But I just think not executing is, yes, number one, too much passing. And then when those passes don't click, then you're in trouble. Inconsistent play from young players, yes. The young players are still learning, and they don't have it figured out yet. I mean, look at Sonny Milano. He's in and out of the lineup now. You know, he was the leading goal scorer. He still has 5 goals. And you might say, well, why is he not in there on an everyday basis? Well, because the other things he's doing is putting you in jeopardy, not helping you to be in a position to win at all times. And that's your job. You've got to make sure you do it offensively and defensively. And defensively is where he's having the struggles. The away from the puck struggles is what's keeping him out of the lineup right now. So, yes, it's a combination of all of those things. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, you can't make the young guys grow up any faster. They're going to go at their own pace. And you're executing, that's the one you can control, hands down, especially the veterans. All right? Start to shoot the puck. Quit passing it so much. If you are going to pass it, make a better decision. You know, those types of things. That's the one that they can really control as a group. Justin Needham says, on a scale of 1 to Bobrovsky, was the 2-on-0 save he made the most impressive save you've ever seen a goaltender make? Live? Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I would say so. I was impressed like everybody else because I thought the game was over. I mean, I was ready to make the call that's it for the night. Lose the first game ever at the new Detroit Arena, blah, 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 blah. So I was really impressed that he was able to do what he did. It's probably the most impressive save that I've seen live. Now, I mean, thanks to social media, you see every great save of every night, and I've seen some doozies. Pucks whacked out of the air by sticks, guys reaching around behind their back and making a catch when they really just kind of stuck the glove there and hoped that the puck was where they thought it was, that kind of stuff, you know? So, I mean, there's some real, real big ones, but that's the best one I've ever seen in person, yes, for sure. No question about that. Jonathan Zygmunt says, what's your best advice for interacting and talking with women? Oh, Jonathan. And what will we need to happen to make Nationwide Arena 100% full each game? Well, I guess if you can learn to talk to women, and if every single guy can learn to talk to a woman and then bring her to the arena, then we could get it 100% full. But in all seriousness, the second part of the question is really easy. The second part is win. Just win. And if you win, it'll be 100% full. There's no doubt. Not even a question in my mind about that. So that's the easy part. Just win. What's my advice for interacting with women? Oh, goodness. What do you think? I'm Hitch? And I don't mean Ken Hitchcock, former Blue Jackets coach. I mean like the Will Smith character, Hitch, from that movie. I love that movie, by the way. I did love that movie. Is it okay to say that? Is that because that wasn't really, is that more of a, can you say chick flick still, or is that politically incorrect? It's probably completely politically incorrect now to say that, but I don't know any terminology for it. But I think that movie kind of leaned that way, but it had Will Smith and Kevin James in it. So I thought that was a great movie. be yourself. Be yourself. Don't try to be something you're not. Okay? Be yourself. And she's either going to like it or not like it, and she doesn't like it, then that's not the one for you. Simple as that. Be yourself. Be, unless you're a complete jerk in real life, then you might want to be something else and try to be nice. But no, just be yourself, and people have got to like you for who you are. Again, if they don't like you for who you are, then what are you going to do? You going to be something you're not? No. Even if you try, that's only going to last for so long. You're eventually going to revert back to what you really are. So be who you are. Be who you are. That's my advice. I don't know if it's going to help you or not. You're going to have to tell me. David Shepard says, how good is Bobrovsky? Good? Good, David? Start with great, and we'll go on from there. He's won the Vezina Trophy 2 times, including last year. So start with great, and then we'll talk. Lou Chapman says, in building a power play, should the team focus on their own plays or build around the penalty kill of the team that they are playing? On your own, always, Lou, because the way that the other team's play are going to change. Every team is going to have a different look on their penalty kill. There's no way you'd be adjusting every time you go out to play a game. So you worry about yourself, what you have to do, your own structure. You get the puck to the net, you bang it home, whatever. Whatever you're going to do, whatever your strategy is going to be, just worry about your strategy, because those other teams are all going to be different in the way that they go about it. Dale Jennings, what's been your favorite Blue Jackets jersey over the years? Well, this is a good question. Good question. And I'm going to tell you flat out. Being in the minors in Syracuse when this franchise first started to compete in the NHL and being the first American Hockey League affiliate of this team, the original jersey, I didn't like it, never did like it, and if that makes you cringe, so be it. The question was asked of me. I get to give my opinion. I thought the ones that we had in Syracuse were better than the ones that were here, to be honest with you. Then the third jersey came around. That's the one I liked, and that's the one that eventually morphed into the regular game day jersey now. So that's your answer. I like that original third with the star and the flag wrapped around it, which everybody liked, obviously, because it became the primary sweater. And, today, I'm going to tell you something else, too. The jerseys now, not a fan. I'm not a fan. And what am I not a fan of? The font of the numbers. I don't like it. I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard to pick up from upstairs at times. It's hard. The numbers are not as distinct as they were on the old jerseys. They were much more distinct to pick out on the old jerseys. Case in point, Josh Anderson scores a goal in Montreal. I can see the 7, and it looks like a 1. It was 2 sevens. It was just the way he was and just the font of the number. So I'm not a big fan of the font. And I'll tell you something. In this day and age, you look at football, especially college football, and then those NFL Thursday night games, some of the uniforms they come up with, they have absolutely no regard for those of us that are trying to pick out players and identify them from way upstairs. Zero. Because there's some stupid uniforms out there. I mean, when you're going a black jersey with a black number and stuff like that, there's crazy uniforms. And I know I'm on a soapbox here, but there is, I'm telling you, nobody... I will guarantee you that no uniform designer ever goes to a play-by-play announcer and says, what do you think of these? Would you be able to see these well? Does this stand out? Would it be easy to identify from way upstairs in the rafters? No. No, it's not. So my favorite was the original third that now that made its way into being the primary sweater. How's that? All right, Dale. Thanks for the question, Dale. Get to blow off some steam. I like when I get to blow off steam. Allison Snyder says, was Alexander Wentworth worth the six-year extension? Yes, Allison. Yes. Calm down. Just relax, Allison. It'll be fine. He's going through a tough spot here, but yeah. You look at what, I mean, it's a fair contract. Look at his numbers and what he took for money and what some other guys in the league are getting paid. Like, it's a fair contract, and it's good. And if he doesn't, if it's not panning out, then you'll be able to find another team that thinks that they can get the most out of him, and you can get something back. I'll guarantee you that. I will guarantee you that. That's the way pro sports works. You have a talented guy that's not doing it. There's always another team out there that thinks, man, if we could just get that guy, we could fix him. And usually what happens is they can't fix him, and then another team thinks they can fix him, and now four teams have gone by and nobody can fix him. That's not going to be the case with Alexander Wenberg. He's going to fix himself. Physician, heal thyself, as the saying goes. He'll fix himself, and he'll be fine, and you'll be happy with the contract before it's all said and done. Brown-eyed Lauren says, I have another newbie question. Can you explain points in the standings? A win equals two, but what are the other point values? What other point values are there, and how do they work in the standings? The two for a win, no matter what kind of win you get, whether you get it in regulation, overtime, or a shootout, you get 1 point. If you go to overtime and lose, the loser point, I like to call it, the overtime or shootout, even if you lose in that, you get 1 point. But then at the end of the year, the team that has more regulation wins, if you're tied with somebody in points, whichever team has more wins in regulation and didn't have to go to the overtime and shootout to get it, gets a tiebreaker. So you want to win in regulation as much as you possibly can. But they still got the loser point. Just get rid of it. That's what I say. Just get rid of it. If you lose, you go home with nothing. Done. Well, that would change a lot of things. Boy, would the third periods become way more exciting then. And the overtimes, oh, they would be way more exciting. A lot more pressure would be put on. Eric Bogan says, why do some people make fun of the Nationwide Arena cannon? Do they think it's silly or are they just jealous? Well, it's both. They think it's silly because they're jealous, because they don't have anything that cool. That's what I think. I mean, listen, everybody knows about it. Everybody talks about it. If they're talking about it, it's a good thing, right? If they're talking about it, it's a good thing. You have something that they don't have, and it scares the snot out of the opposing teams. It does. Artemi Panarin talked about it in his first press conference. He said at least when that cannon goes off, now it's going to be a good thing, not a bad thing. Yeah, he's right. So, no, they're jealous, and that's why they make fun of it. It's not silly. They're silly. They just have nothing to compare to it. Do I Have a Pulse says, please explain how power play percentage and penalty kill percentage are calculated, since not all go for 2 minutes, often abbreviated by another penalty. Doesn't matter. If you have a power play and it lasts 4 seconds, it still counts as a power play. So it all gets added the same way. If you go 1 for 4 on the night and one of those power plays was 10 seconds, doesn't matter. They calculate it the same way. Same way with the penalty kill. It all goes the same. It still counts. It's not 1 for 3 and a quarter. It's 1 for 4. So it's just straight up. It's how it is. The abbreviated ones still count as full ones. Brian Paradis or Paradis. Not sure how you say it, Brian. What are some infractions that might occur for a player to be waived out of participating in a faceoff? Well, you have to have your skates squared up. You have to be behind the line. Those hash mark lines, you have to be behind that. So if you're edging over that line, you could get waved out. If you don't have your stick down when you're supposed to, like the visiting guy has to put his stick down first. If you don't have your stick down when you're supposed to, you can get waved out for that. Or you can get waved out because your teammates are cheating in. Your teammates are trying to edge in to the circle. And if they do that, you can get waved out because of it. So those are the major things that'll get you knocked out of a faceoff. Next one. What do we have? CBJ Joe. Best arena experience other than Nationwide? Montreal's a good one. We're going there tomorrow. It's always packed. It's rocking. It's loud. They cheer in French, so that's different. No, I'm kidding. The cheering sounds the same. But no, Montreal's a really good one. It's a big building. Like I said, it's always full. There's an electricity there, a real electricity there, in the fan, in the people that are in the stands, and the way it just kind of transmits. And they'll turn on their team quick. So you can use that. That energy can go against you, or you can use it to go for you if you can turn it around really quickly. And, you know, they've had a tough season, so you want to get that energy turned against the home team as quickly as you possibly can. But that's probably, I would say that's the one. When you come to, you know, the just experience of it, I would recommend you, if you ever have a chance to go there, to go, because it's something. It really is something. They take it so seriously, so passionately. It's worth the experience. And finally, Uber CBJ fans, when Lucas Sedlak comes back, do you see Zach Dalby being finished? With Sedlak, can we roll a real fourth line, and is Milano a wash? You never say finished, because a guy goes to the minors and he could come back at some point and be a factor. So you never say finished. But right now, that is a glaring hole in the lineup, not having Lucas Sedlak. The Blue Jackets need him back. Yes, they will be able to roll a fourth line. I don't know if that will include Sonny Milano or if it won't. I have no idea. Could be Tyler Mott and Markus Hannikainen, which actually in many ways seems more likely, quite frankly. Milano's not a wash, but he still has a lot of work he's got to do. You know, it's again, you got to put in the work if you want the reward. And he's not a wash, but he's in a precarious position right now. There's no question. Tyler Mott's come in and done more good things than Sonny Milano on both sides of the puck. That's the thing. Tyler Mott's playing the 200-foot game, and that's what John Tortorella not only wants, that's what he needs out of somebody in that position. So Tyler Mott is giving it to him right now. But when Lucas Sedlak comes back, yes, I feel we roll four lines. I'm not coaching. I feel they roll four lines. And in Mott, Hannikainen, that's not a bad line, if you ask me. It's not a bad line at all, once you put Sedlak in the middle of it. And I'm not knocking Zach Dalby, but he struggled. He struggled. They took the bad penalty in New York. He's forever going to be remembered for that as it stands right now. He's actually hurt right now, too. So there's a glaring hole in the middle of the fourth line. And they will have it filled when Lucas Sedlak's ready to go. That's not going to be soon enough. They're still going to be limping through without that fourth line until that time. But, yeah, when he's back, I think you'll see a lot more order return to what's going on with the forward group. Thank you for your questions today. They are always well thought out. And now you get more characters on Twitter, so you can get them to me a little bit easier. So it's all a good thing. The whole thing is good. Tomorrow, the Blue Jackets are back in action. They'll play in Montreal at 7:30 tomorrow night, which means I will have a game day edition of CBJ in 30 for you tomorrow from Montreal. I'm going to do it in English. I'm going to opt out of doing it in French, because if I did it in French, it would last about, as long as it takes to say bienvenue, because that's one of the very few things that I can say in French. So it would be like CBJ in 2 seconds, not in 30. So I'll do it in English tomorrow from Montreal. Game day tomorrow, Blue Jackets and the Canadiens. Until then, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long. I'll talk-